end it after the shove it, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Going to be a bit of a somber one this week, guys, and I'm not going to lie, but we're going to break it down. We're going to stay objective. We're going to even inject some positivity, I'm sure, somewhere, because Lee's here. He's a very positive chap, so there we go. Si, you are back from holiday. I'm not going to ask how you are, but I'm going to ask how your holiday was, mate.
Thanks for that, Andy. Yeah, it was really good, actually. Got a quick funny story to tell you. We went, for those that most people don't know, we went to Iceland for a few days in the hope of seeing the Northern Lights. And whilst we were there, we took a trip to the geysers out in the middle of Iceland. And while we were there, it was really cold and icy, and the tour guide we were with, so be careful how you leave the area on the ice. He said the best way to leave the area is to think of yourself as a penguin as you walk across the ice. So here we were, me and my son Danny were doing the waddle waddle across the ice. So waddle waddle has made it to Iceland.
Amazing. Yeah, that's what we'd like to see, mate. And Lee, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad.
All good. Right. 34-3 defeat, out of the playoff hunt, 8-8 on the season. It's all pretty disappointing, isn't it, lads? Let's not pretend otherwise. But, you know, Lee, I'll kick it your way. You're normally injecting positivity. Is there anything that you took from the game at all that was, you know, worthy of a smile or give the listeners something nice to ease themselves into the podcast with? Come on, mate, rack your brain. There's got to be something.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be honest, with 2 weeks to go, we were in with a chance, right? Would you have believed it when we were in London? Would you have believed it, you know, eight games into the season? No. You know, let's be honest, for everyone who was looking back and saying, oh, they didn't really beat anyone and stuff like that, also no one expected us to beat the Ravens for that first game we won after losing seven in a row, you know? It was an accomplishment to be where we were. Winning streaks are hard to come by in the NFL. You know, the other team with a long win streak was the Kansas City Chiefs. They got beat last night. And yes, they were in a closer game, but hey, defeat's defeat. Like, as I keep saying, it was chalked up as one in the loss column for the Chiefs the same way it was for us. And we lost to what is now the number one seed in the AFC. So
there you go. That was your positivity for the episode, guys. So let's flip it.
I've got more for later. It's okay.
Okay, that's good.
It's just not necessarily revolving around this particular game.
No, exactly. No. Si, just get into it, mate, to just pick a point to go with, and we'll dive that way.
The point is, I immediately thought of actually when the game finished is we can't beat the good teams. If you look at our schedule this year, who've they not beaten? Buffalo twice, the Raiders, the Colts, the Buccaneers, all of which look as though they're heading to the playoffs. And we've obviously got the Patriots next week who have also qualified already. We can't beat them. And the teams we have beaten in that Houston, Baltimore, the Jets twice, Panthers, New York and the Saints, none of which any of those are looking to get in the playoffs. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we just can't compete against the better teams. And that's been the case for many a year now. And nothing seems to have changed.
Disappointing, isn't it? Because, you know, I think we'd all be sitting here having a different conversation if it was 34-31. You know, it was like back and forward. But just the manner of the defeat, again, is like Lee just said that about, and I don't know what point you're going to make, but you mentioned the Chiefs and the Bengals last night, you know, and it's just kind of it's different to that, isn't it? Because it's a good game to watch. You kind of back and forward, and then one of you's got to win it. But this one's just from the first quarter onwards, just pretty turgid stuff, really.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent of the Bills game at the end of last season, where you go away from home in cold or bad, relatively poor weather against a team who are also in the playoff hunt. and it was a very similar performance, and that they seemed to capitulate, particularly late on in the fourth. So it was very reminiscent of a Bills performance. And of course, we all came away from that game thinking, OK, what have we got to do to fix those issues that were so exposed in that game? And it was very similar yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally. There's a, I'll take it slightly on a different note, which was the fact that the Titans just established the run game early. They went back to it often. It was, you know, Tannehill only threw the ball 18 times in the game, Tua on the other hand 38 times, and obviously you're going to get some of that being the team that's behind. But again, we had Duke Johnson picking up 10, 12 yard chunks every drive, but then moving away from it. It just felt like an oddly coached game as well to me, Lee. What do you reckon?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, even the fourth down play that we converted in the game where Tua rolls out after, you know, having a couple of handling issues and makes kind of a gingerly passes it for a first down. Like, to me, as they lined up, I turned to my brother, who I watched the game with, and just said, like, I cannot understand why you're not giving it to Duke Johnson downhill. Because, let's be honest, I don't think he's run for a negative game, you know, in the kind of 3-4 games he's played for Miami. Like, they're not all, you know, they're not all game-busting runs, but, like, you need a yard, or in this case, a very short yard. But, you know, I think the coaching's a big issue. And I, just to go back to what you were hitting on a minute ago, I do think we would be having this same conversation if we'd lost by a field goal, because I think the conversation would then be, well, we can't win a close game because we lost all those other one-score games early in the season. I think, you know, it's just raw because it happened last night.
Yeah, it's just quite damning. You're completely right. We'd still be talking about it in that way. It just wouldn't be. It would just feel as sour, does it? I mean,
yeah, of course. I don't disagree with you, but I think, you know, this conversation is going to be a downer no matter what, because we'd all started to believe there was a chance, no matter how unlikely it was. And I think actually, just to go even a step further, if you'd played this out and we'd won this week and we'd won next week, I believe that you see this same fall in the first round of the playoffs, because you've expended the energy to get there, and then you see that fall. And I think we would be absolutely raging if they put in that performance in a playoff game. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's better that it came now, but I don't know if the end was going to. No matter how it ended, I think this is a conversation we were going to be having.
Yeah, but it would have been a bit sweeter if we'd gone to the playoffs, obviously. But that's the way it is, isn't it? It's just a very disappointing thing. Go on, Si.
You mentioned about the bizarre coaching. Don't know if you guys have realised that Duke Johnson carried the ball 7 times for 49 yards in the first half, which had a pretty good average there. He didn't carry it once in the second half, not once yet. Miles Gaskin carried it 5 times in the second half, 4.6 average. So clearly you've got some sort of momentum with somebody who appears to be your new number one running back, yet you choose not to use him at all in the second half. It doesn't make sense.
I think it's kind of a microcosm of what we've seen throughout the season. Like, where's Mike Gesicki disappeared to? Where's his targets gone? Because his targets have disappeared. But, you know, not just the catches, but, you know, Devontae Parker getting targeted once last week. Like, you can kind of play this out with a bunch of players. How did Jalen Waddle go missing again? Like, you know, I understand he's getting covered by their best player, but when you're losing, you have no choice but to go to the most talented guys on the roster. This isn't the time to try and scheme it. This is the time to go to the most talented. You saw it a little bit, you know, and they tried to force the ball into Gesicki a little bit. He gets a couple of catches, and all of a sudden, commentators are saying, oh, Mike Gesicki's here. And it's like, but then he goes away again because we go back to kind of outthinking ourselves. I think it's a personnel problem. It's a coaching problem, which makes it Brian Flores' problem. But I don't think it's as simple as replace Brian Flores, you fix this problem, because we've seen this problem before. Maybe we can get into this later, but I do think you need to get a new OC. I think you need an experienced OC. And I think you need someone that's not necessarily going to be top of everyone's list to take if he was to have one good year.
It's just the offense is just, it's not been great even during the winning stretch. No. It was defensively, obviously. But when you look yesterday, that at the half, it was 17-3 obviously, I think we had the missed field goal in the first half. Do we have missed field goal in the first half? Yeah. So then you kind of just think to yourself, come out of the break, run the ball the first time you get a possession, and that's where you were. And like you say, like no carries for Duke Johnson in the second half. And it was so obvious that we could have taken the ball down the field if we just punched the run and then, you know, supplemented that with Tua on third down if needed. But yeah, I just lose the will to live with it a bit.
I think even 17-3 at the half, when you broke it down, as bad as a performance as it had been, they scored a touchdown on a short field. Like, it was really a 10-3 game in open play. We just gave them a short field, right? So at that stage, you're thinking, right, get one touchdown drive, and all of a sudden, you're looking like you're back in it. But the problem was, everyone was bad. Like, the defense wasn't great either yesterday, you know, and let's be honest, you know, we know we've been riding the defense through this. We know that's the strength of this team. But they weren't great yesterday. And, you know, they had no answer for Donta Foreman at all. You know, they never figured it out. If anything, the more he ran, the worse it got. And which is what we would like to see with Duke Johnson. But, you know, that and this is probably the first week where we've sat here in a pregame and not said, this running back scares us. We've had Christian McCaffrey come up and say, well, that scares us. We've had Alvin Kamara, that scares us. We had Saquon Barkley. That could be a problem. No, taking care of all of those. Donta Foreman was the one that's killed us.
Yeah. Disappointing all round, isn't it?
I think what Si hit on there was more concerning for me. Rather than it being us losing to a better team, because I think the Ravens were a better team coming into the game. I think the more important thing to me is they played so poorly again in a bad weather game. And we haven't played in many bad weather games. But every time we do, we really kind of poop the bed. Like, there was a lot, I'm not making excuses for Tua, but there was also a lot of catchable balls that were dropped yesterday as well. It's not all on his shoulders. There was plays that in Miami I expect them to be coming down with. The team just looks unprepared to play in bad weather.
So we won't go to Tua just yet, but just to kind of come back to individual players, it's quite interesting looking at the next gen stats on the game, the amount of separation everyone's creating. Waddle, Smythe, Ford all creating more than 3 yards of separation on average, and the league average is 2.9, so getting open. Parker just doesn't create separation, as we're well aware, 1.5 yards, and Gesicki 2.3, so the receiver's still creating that separation. It just wasn't the day for it, was it? And obviously, like, as you said, put some balls on the ground too. But then you look at the kind of way the Titans played that, and they've got lesser players like George Swain getting open 5 yards a separation per play, Chester Rodgers 4.4. It's all very like similar, but just poor across the board on offense and poor on special teams as well for me. I know I tweeted about it, I messaged you guys, but you can't be having those 30-yard punts. I mean, obviously, you can't tell from the TV what the wind's like and stuff like that, but you very much got the impression that Pilardi was just putting it, you know, we were dropping punts from 30 yards into their 30 to 40 yard line, and that's where that first touchdown came from. They didn't pick up a first yard, as you said, Si, and they won the field battle by that. That was just shocking special teams play. So, yeah, just all.
If the weather's going to be a factor in that sort of game, then that's what your pre-game prep is all about, isn't it? In terms of judging the way the ball sails through that stadium, because it's open at both ends, there is going to be a wind factor to some extent, and of course you add the rain to that as well. It is going to be a factor. Yes, it's the same for both punters, but that's what your pre-game prep is for, to judge how you need to kick it in that stadium.
Exactly. And if it's that much of a problem, especially there's one where we went for it around the midfield line, you take the fourth down attempt, don't you? You have a go at it rather than punting it away. So, yeah, all very disappointing. But, you know, where do we go from here, lads? That's the main question next. Does anyone want to dive into anything else from the game, or should we move forward into the kind of cesspit of Dolphins Twitter?
Let's do that.
Just one thing to add to the game. We came into the game thinking that AJ Brown was going to be potentially a key weapon for the Titans, but they kept him relatively quiet. Two catches, I believe. So you have to put that down to a win for the secondary. They limited the Titans to just 110 passing yards. So whilst in the whole scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. Again, it just demonstrates where that strength is in terms of the secondary and performing against top receivers.
Yeah, I guess the argument there is kind of that they didn't bother throwing the ball, did they? They just pounded it at us and we just couldn't stop it, which I'm still maintaining we could have done the same.
Which is the bizarre thing. So that's why I keep saying we're kind of outsmarting ourselves, because other teams do it to us. If we can't stop something, they do it and do it and do it until we prove we can stop it or until they've won the game. But we don't seem to be that team. We seem to be, you know, we have to spread it around and stay balanced at all times, when sometimes it's okay to be run heavy or pass heavy. You know, to be honest, I felt against the Saints, you know, we kept pounding the ball out the middle. It wasn't really working. Okay, go pass heavy. If that's not working, try something else. But, you know.
Because we beat the Jets by literally just running the ball for them, didn't we? That was like such an easy game. And it felt so good, even though we were like 10-0 behind to start the game. He just always felt in no doubt, because of the yardage we were picking up in the run game, that there was a time that they were just going to break instead of bending, and we just ran them over. But yeah, sorry, Colm.
If there is another positive to take from this, and I've managed to find one, would you believe? Christian Wilkins had a career high 11 tackles, including one tackle for a loss. And that was the second straight week that he'd had a career high in tackles after the previous week's 8 against the Saints. And he's got 83 tackles on a year, which leads all NFL defensive linemen, and he's the most in the NFL since Pittsburgh's Cameron Haywood also had 83 a couple of years back. So if there is a positive then to take from yesterday's performance, then Christian Wilkins is it, I think.
Nice one. Let's just hope he's part of this Dolphins team for a while to come, along with some of those other guys on the defensive line for sure. Right. What happens next?
now we put on the hazmat suits and dive into...
That's it, yeah. I mean, we've got the Patriots on Sunday. Let's just... I mean, does anyone want to talk about that game at all? It's one of those ones that we do want to win, isn't it? And obviously, we want to... got any dent in the arm we can do of the Patriots. But go on, Lee, come on. You go.
Yeah, I think it's integral to get a win. I don't think they have a choice. I think the way to sort of... you can't undo the damage that was done yesterday, because it knocked you out of the playoffs. But this proves that you're a team that were worthy. That, you know, if you can go and beat the Patriots, you lose to what was, say, right now the number one seed. If you go and beat another playoff contender, then, like, you've got something to go to the owner with and say, look, we did this the following week. You cannot afford to implode again. Now, they've got every advantage, because Patriots that they need things to happen to win the division. Their playoff spot's clinched, so they could play it anyway. It's in Miami, where we know we tend to perform fairly well right now. So, you know, they've got every opportunity to win the game. But I do think it is an important game. I just think it's important.
I don't think NFL players find themselves on the beach, so to speak, in inverted commas. I think they realise that it is their career that they're playing for. They're putting performances on tape. So to simply lay down and die is not in their nature, I don't think. So I think they will go out to win the game. Anything to wipe the smile off Mac Jones's and Bill Belichick's face, that you saw them laughing together at the weekend. So I'm sure they'll put in a decent performance and try and sign off at home with a good win.
It's a good point, especially it could be a number of players like last game in Miami as well, isn't it? So that, you know, playing for contracts.
That's it. There's people playing for bonuses. There's people playing for contracts. You know, it's a big game. Like, I don't think it's the way you should go. But at the same time, the coaching staff could be playing for their jobs. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot still on the line for a game that kind of means nothing. It only means nothing in regards to the playoffs. It doesn't mean nothing to everybody else.
Jacoby Brissett playing for his next backup contract or more. There you go. We'll see. We'll move past it then and just talk about the longer-term future. You mentioned, actually, let's start with the coaching, actually, because you mentioned it there, Lee. You don't think it's the way to go. By that, do you mean you don't think it's right to get rid of any of the current staff at the end of the year?
Yeah, I'm... The only thing I'm changing is the OC situation. I don't like it. I don't think it's worked in their favour. I think it's been very muddled, which kind of goes into what we're talking there about play calling, the player usage. And I think Brian Flores clearly has the defence. Once he decided to go back to being more involved, no matter, like, he says he wasn't calling the defence, but what, however you want to believe that played out, there was a notable change. So whatever he did, got this defense back to what it was. So that's fine. I'm okay with that. He needs a right-hand man who he can delegate the offense to and be made aware of what's going on rather than kind of overseeing it, because whatever's happening obviously isn't working. I don't like... What I really don't like at the moment is after every single loss, the answer is change the quarterback, fire everybody. Every time a team loses a game, like, you know, if the fans were in charge, we would have had 14 coaches this year already. So, like, you know, it's ridiculous because we would have fired most at halftime. You know, I think Brian Flores proved enough by getting a win streak, regardless of whether they beat bad teams or not. They lost to bad teams at the start of the season. So, you know, that they turned something around. He showed that, to me, let's be honest, last week people were talking about him as a coach of the year candidate. So, you know, I didn't believe he was as bad a coach when they were playing badly as people did. I just think it's not always, the grass isn't always greener. I don't know, the Jets are a massively better coach team under Robert Saleh than under Adam Gase. And, like, we know how bad that is. I think it's so easy to want that fresh new face in there, but it doesn't necessarily work. The Giants, how many coaches, do you know what I mean? And you can do this with loads of teams. It's not, you know, Jags fans are pretty happy about getting Urban Meyer in.
Yeah.
You know, and so you can go on and on picking it. We've done it before. We're happy every time we get, everyone's happy when they get a new coach, but it's not for me. What I would do, OC is kind of extreme and people wouldn't like it, but it's what I would do is I'd be offering Bill O'Brien all the money he wants, because he's an experienced NFL head coach. I think Bill O'Brien, the head coach, wasn't getting sacked in Houston. I think Bill O'Brien, the GM, was getting fired. And I don't think necessarily if he was to have a good year, someone would come running in to take him to be their head coach. I think, you know, he's kind of got to earn that trust again. That's the kind of route I'd be going. Someone who's proven in the NFL. Let's be honest, as a coach in the NFL, went to a number of playoff games with that Houston Texans team. Like, yeah, I don't know. You know, not having a bad year at Alabama, although I know it's Alabama. Like, they do obviously have a talent advantage, but... Yeah, that would be more my favourite than just literally cleaning house.
Yeah, I think I do agree that we should get in a veteran offensive coordinator. It'd be interesting if it was Bill O'Brien, wouldn't it? Because that would put the organisation off another move that they might make if a certain quarterback isn't a fan of his, as we were led to believe. But
also, I think it does give you the opportunity to sell it to him as, okay, well, if this still goes down the toilet, you could be the next head coach. Yeah. You could have first crack at it. Like, that's the lure to get him out of college, because it's probably a pretty sweet gig he's got right now.
That's it. To be honest, I'd be looking at Doug Peterson a bit more, but I also think Doug Peterson could be still a head coach. I think he'd be very unlucky not to be a head coach going into next season. But if the Jags aren't interested, etc., then that would be someone I'd really, really like to see on board. Si, your thoughts on coaching situation? Any kind of changes you'd make, or you know, ride it out as it is?
If you think about what we were talking regularly on during the 7-game losing streak, we were quite often commenting on, well, somebody's got to be accountable for the poor run of form, and we were debating who that should be, whether it was the GM or the coach or the position coordinators. And then all of a sudden you see a complete turnaround, which I think has ultimately saved a lot of people's jobs. I can't see there being too many wholesale changes. One area that I potentially would look at is the offensive line, because yes, they may have performed better towards the latter part of the season, but look how long it took them to actually get to that point in the first place. I mean, they should have identified the right pegs and putting them in the right holes to begin with, and not let the likes of Matt Skura go to the Giants, who's playing relatively decent, Jermaine Illuminor, who's playing regularly for the Raiders. All of those they got rid of without really giving them a chance. And then you're stuck with the likes of Jesse Davis and Austin Jackson, who's not developed properly, and the like. So I think there needs to be something looked at from an offensive line position. They don't seem to be able to identify and select the right players or the good players. Time and time again, we think they've fixed it, and they just don't. So if there's anywhere on the roster that needs a bit of an overhaul from a coaching perspective, it's that O-line, I think.
Hopefully Jesse Davis isn't on the roster next year. Surely one man has done enough to not be on this roster. If everyone else is still here, that's the only one person I'd like to, you know, I don't like to cost people their jobs, but that'd be the one person I'd say, please find another team.
Well, you never know. Chris Graham might be listening and do it because you said so.
Exactly. Hear, hear.
Then you will feel bad.
I won't. I'll be much happier at right tackle next year. But yeah, I definitely agree on the line, actually. I think I'm right in saying, and I think I read this somewhere, that it's the first year that the offensive line coach has coached the offensive line as well. So that's a slight question mark as to whether, you know, Flores has got the right person and doing the job anyway. But all very interesting, coaching wise. I mean, are we all happy defensive coaching wise? Do you think there's a chance that that Boyer gets picked up somewhere else? You know, is he going to be head coaching candidate? Defense is obviously looking strong. So, Si, your thoughts on that?
No, I don't think he will. I think the fact that they got off to that really awful start, and he had the defense, yes, whilst they've been one of the best in the NFL during that win streak, I think the fact that they were one of the worst during that losing streak, and also the game yesterday against one of the top teams, has perhaps identified a few chinks that he still needs to work on as a coordinator. Having said that, though, there is promise in that defense. They were the best over that 7-game win streak for a reason. So as long as they can kind of enhance that, if you like, and try and use that positivity to take into next season, then I don't see any reason why they can't continue to perform to that level. Obviously, changes do need to be made so that they can play better against playoff caliber teams. But overall, I think it's not a unit that I would look to change coaching-wise that drastically at all.
Yeah, I think the defensive players buy into the defensive coaching staff as well on this team, don't you? It would have been so easy for the players to kind of, you know, after 7 games losing on the bounce, just to kind of just fudge it through the rest of the season. And, you know, no one would have like blinked an eye because of the way it started. But the fact they've bought into the coaching staff and turned it around and played the way they have it at times has been really impressive. So there's obviously a connection there. So you'd be foolish to risk that, I think. But I really don't think that can be said on the offensive side of the ball. So, yeah, we'll see where things go there. Personnel-wise, then, let's start with the quarterback position, shall we?
why is that, Andy? Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, why is that? Why would I even bother to ask? Because some would ask me on Twitter yesterday. But yeah. A lot of people put in yesterday's loss on Tua. I think, understandably, I think it's probably the second worst game he's had other than the Bills game last year, possibly, in a Dolphins shirt. But is Tua Tagovailoa the future of the Miami Dolphins quarterback position? And do you think he'll be the starter in week one next year, Lee?
Yes and yes. There you go. That'll say it, didn't it?
That was quite definitively, wasn't it?
I'm not changing my mind off the back of one bad game. Like, the Packers got smashed in the first game of the season, so we were worrying about Aaron Rodgers being any good. No, he's probably going to be the MVP. Like, and off the back of one game, it's just too much for me. Like, 21 starts. Sorry, he's not done enough to sell me on not being the guy, and the quarterback class in the draft, if there was someone standout that you really wanted to package picks and go after, I mean, to me, it's just expensive. And you're no closer to guaranteeing success, you know, see Sam Darnold, see any other number of high pick quarterbacks that don't pan out. you want to go into the free agent market, that's great. But I sell you on, if you want to go after an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson, I mean, I'm sticking away from Deshaun Watson just for the moment, but you want to go after one of those guys that's rumored to be on the move, be prepared to not fix your O-line. You know, do you want to see Aaron Rodgers back there with Jesse Davis protecting his you know, a right tackle still? I think you open just a bigger can of worms by doing it, as he's not proven he's not the guy. He's not played. How many games this year can you truly point at him and say, you cost us the game? And I don't think it's enough for me to say, you've got to move him out for the price it's going to cost.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Who are only played in four losses, Lee.
That's
so four of the losses we had were effectively Jacoby Brissett was at quarterback. And the other three was the Jags, the Falcons, where two were played really well, one would say. The other one was the Bills, which historically the Dolphins as a team can't play well in Buffalo, never mind whether the quarterback cost them the game. And then his only other defeat was yesterday. So there isn't too much, if anything at all, you can pin solely on Tua for any of the defeats this season.
But I do definitely, I understand the question. I understand why it's going to be a problem, because he's not done enough to definitively say he is the guy. And I can certainly appreciate it. But for me, you know, do you want to send him away like the Chargers did with a Drew Brees?
That's like, the question, isn't it?
Sorry, my other thing is the whole Ryan Tannehill thing. Ryan Tannehill, who, you know, as was well documented during the week, is having the worst statistical season of his career, is currently sitting at the number one spot. Has Tua looked worse than the 84 games that Ryan Tannehill had to prove he wasn't the guy? I don't know. Just for me, 21 games is just simply not enough. We've got resources to build and let him prove he's not the guy.
Yeah. I think the thing for me, to go back to my question, do I think Tua will be the quarterback? I'm answering my own questions that you both have done as well. Do I think Tua will start in week one next year? Yes. Do I think he's a long-term answer at quarterback for this Dolphins team? I don't think so. And I'll articulate why, just because I feel like it's I completely agree with you guys. I don't think it's a long time to kind of express your, like, to kind of get the full picture of Tua as the Dolphins quarterback. But there's various things which make me doubt whether he is the long-term answer. The first one is whether I just don't know whether the team and the upper echelons of the organization believe in him. And like that's you know, aside from my personal opinion, you wouldn't be pursuing Deshaun Watson until the trade deadline if that was the case. So that just puts a seed of doubt in us as fans, doesn't it? And, you know, it doesn't matter our opinion if those people don't think that's the case. B, the eye test for me is where I really struggle, and I know that I'll probably get caned, but I don't really care. But you watch the other quarterbacks that were drafted in Tua's year. And I know the different circumstances, different situations, different supporting casts. You know, it's all very, you know, subjective, but there isn't the same. The quarterback to the Dolphins at the moment doesn't drive the Dolphins to win. He kind of rides on the coattails of the defense, which is fine. And you can play winning football like that. But for me, my personal preference is to have that guy that kind of, you know, I said to you, I think I actually said to someone else this morning, my preference is for like a strong arm, looking downfield, stretching the play, that sort of thing, which is all well and good. Not every quarterback's like that, but that for me is just why I don't think that Tua will drive this team forward. I think you look and it's kind of, it feels unambitious for the Dolphins to sit with Tua if we're not going to start seeing drastic improvements. And people keep throwing the performance of the offensive line back towards me, and that's absolutely fine. But then I look at the 2019 Houston Texans in the playoffs, and I look at the ranking of their offensive line in 2019, which is 32nd in the league. That doesn't mean I want Deshaun Watson, but that's just an example of the fact that if you've got a quarterback that's elite, it kind of elevates your team above and beyond, then they can kind of account for some of the offensive line weaknesses. I look at Joe Burrow at the moment. He's taken 40 sacks this season. And I know he's thrown to Ja'Marr Chase, who's absolutely excellent. But, you know, Burrow's play in itself is elevating that Bengals team into the playoffs, to the top of that very difficult division with the Ravens and the Steelers and the Browns, all like good teams. I don't think Tua is ever going to do that for this Dolphins team. I think we're going to need a like incredibly impressive defense every year, you know, turnovers, etc. That's what's going to continue to make the Dolphins dominate. And that's why I think it's absolutely fair to question whether Tua is the guy long-term. I don't think we draft anyone next year, Lee. You're completely right. You know, if we draft Kenny Pickett to replace him, it's just completely pointless. What's the point whatsoever? But if you go and look at the veteran market, if you can do something for someone like Russell Wilson, you know, it's going to be very expensive. And again, I hear people going, oh, but if you get Wilson, you can't fix the offensive line. It's just rubbish. We've seen time and again, people can manipulate this cap space to work. You know, you might not be able to bring in loads of big names, but you can definitely add a couple of very good quality offensive linemen with 70-odd million cap space and Wilson in town. Something like that you go after. You know, I don't want it to be stupid and go after, like, I love Jameis Winston, but I don't really want to see Jameis Winston as the starting quarterback of the Dolphins over Tua next year, because it just seems like a very pointless free agency pickup. But can I honestly see them going after somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo if they don't get Deshaun Watson? Then I absolutely can, because I just don't think, going back to my first point, this coaching staff or the front office has faith in Tua as the guys elevate the Dolphins above the Bills, above the Patriots in this division. That's my two pence anyway.
I've got a question about that point. And again, I don't want to sound argumentative.
That's what we're here to do.
But if we're saying that we should consider moving on because the front office and the organization don't believe in this quarterback, then surely we have way bigger problems, because it was their decision to tank to get him.
Like, I'm talking about the ownership of the team, really. I mean,
but that's what I mean, because the owner had made that decision before he hired Flores. Like, he was part of the plan. He agreed to this. So should we now trust him to do something completely? I don't know if we're asking the people who have made the bad decisions to make more decisions to fix the bad decisions that they've made. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. Yeah. I think it's it could be quite a mess.
And that's the point. There is no right or wrong answer in this situation. Both of you have put slightly different arguments forward, both of which are very valid. And it's a matter of opinion, and there's no right or wrong answer here, I don't think.
But I completely agree that there's a chance that we see someone else playing next year. It wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying I would be surprised. I'm just saying I wouldn't do it. But, you know,
it's such a hard one, isn't it? Because I actually really respect I had a joke with some guy on Twitter yesterday about the kind of environment that Tua's working in here, and it's not pleasant whatsoever for a young man who is obviously a talented athlete to come in and have to deal with so much scrutiny. But his problem is that the success of the other people in his same draft class, isn't it? I mean, like I mentioned Hurts, I mentioned Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. All three of them are probably, you know, if the Chargers beat the Raiders next week, they're all probably going to be playing in the NFL playoffs this year. They've all passed them all touchdowns in Tua this year. You know, Herbert and Burrow have turned the ball over four more times through the air, but Tua's fumbled more than both of them. It's like, you know, in comparison to those three guys in his draft class, it just doesn't feel, you know, like he's going to be that successful. Go on, sir.
The difference there is that those guys that you've just mentioned have been given tools to do his job.
Yeah.
Whereas the Dolphins have invested in Tua for a couple of years now as their franchise quarterback, in inverted commas, yet they haven't invested much around him other than Jalen Waddle. The rest of the receivers were already there, already in place. So they weren't chosen to support Tua. Waddle was, because of that connection they've already got. So are they really going to, abandon Tua without any investment to help him? If you guys in your day jobs weren't given the tools to do your job, you wouldn't be able to do it effectively, would you? And the same works for Tua. Why would you abandon somebody who hasn't, who clearly you as a boss haven't given him the tools to do your job? You would want to invest, wouldn't you, and support him, because he's only 2 years into his rookie contract, so it's not like he's in the same situation as Tannehill at the end, where he'd gone 7-8 years and he still hadn't taken that next step. At that point, you can say, yeah, fair enough, let's cut our losses. But on the flip side, is 2 years really enough to determine? I'm not sure it is.
That's it. But that's where I come back to say again, do you think that the team has got the faith in him? Because we all thought that the signing of Will Fuller was bizarre at the time. I just keep going back to the fact that, do we think that Will Fuller was signed with a view to making that move to Watson when possible because of the connection they've got? And it's all hypothetical. We're never going to know the answer to that. But it's just stuff like that. And have they bought in have they seen what they've seen in training camps, summer practices, whatever, and just thought, this isn't the guy, but we'll just ride it until we can get somebody else?
Or was Will Fuller their investment in Tua? Because it's very hard to, because you don't know what's actually going on. Like, if they could just tell us, that'd be really great. I tell you what I'd like to see, and I'd love to know if you guys would be on board with it. I'd like to see an off-season like Ryan Tannehill got, where they went out and got a Brandon Albert and they got a Mike Wallace, where they say, look, we're going to invest all this because regardless of who the quarterback is, let's be honest, our team needs it. Like, everyone was upset when the Packers drafted Jordan Love because Aaron Rodgers needed another wide receiver. Like, so it doesn't matter if you've got Aaron Rodgers or if you've got Mike Glennon. They all need the talent, right? So I don't see the downside to doing it. Throw absolutely everything at building this team, because worst case scenario is at the end of next season, you've got a team in place to drop a quarterback into.
Yeah, that's it. Go on.
The flip side to that is we all know the areas of the team that need strengthening, but you take the offensive linemen, they don't grow on trees. Where are you going to get multiple quality offensive linemen that you can just literally buy and plug into that starting lineup? If they were any good, then their current teams wouldn't let them go in the first place.
It's going to be cap casualties. It's going to be the guys to look at. But it has been done where... who did the Falcons trade for? They traded for the center. And then they traded for another person. So even if you just bought in two pieces, and we think that we've got one piece there, then all of a sudden you've got something to work. Like, you're not going to build all five. It's completely unreasonable to think that that's the case. You're not building a wall in a year. It's just, and to be fair, very few teams have it, because one guy is always going to be weakest and you're always going to point at him and say, that guy needs upgrading. So, but I think it's very plausible to be able to bring in two players, whether one is via a trade, so you're not getting into a bidding war. It's simply paying off the money on the contract and then paying a high-priced free agent. To be honest, I'm not even looking in the draft. I don't care. I'd spend every dollar of free agency money on it if I have to.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And you kind of, I've done a mock or two already, and you see other people do them, and they've got offensive linemen going to the first round. But I just think the team's going to look at it and go, look, we've done this 2 years in a row, at the top of the second round, in the first round, and they're just not producing quality enough players to kind of, because let's not lie, even though if we win this weekend, we'll have had back-to-back winning seasons. That's still not enough to kind of say that if Flores has another, get to the playoffs next year, he's going to have a job at the end of it. So he's also investing himself here, and he must surely see that line is the problem. Even like New England pay their linemen, they don't pay them like phenomenal amounts, but they still pay the linemen, and we haven't got anyone on that offensive line at the moment who's kind of, earned the money or, being paid a big dollar. So it's very difficult. So you hope they can pick up one or two just savvy veterans. You look at the Bucs offensive line, and they've obviously got like an absolute standout at with Tristan Wirfs, who they've got through the draft, but most of them were there with Jameis, and like it was an offensive line that was battered every year when Jameis was there for being bad. And you know they've now got probably the best offensive line in the league, sort of thing. So it's incredibly difficult. You just need one or two pieces, and that right tackle, if you're going to roll with two, we've got to improve Jesse Davis because it's just so bad, isn't it? There's like one, two plays a game where it's basically a free rusher at the quarterback. You see the fumble, you see the costly sack as we saw yesterday. It's just a bit of a shambles, isn't it? But I guess again, like the team might think the investment in a Russell Wilson, in a Deshaun Watson, will negate the need to kind of put big money into the line because they're both proven to win behind poor offensive lines. So yeah, it's
a. You need to hope that the team is able to honestly self scout its own processes, because they need to be able to see that there is certain things that they have been proven to me unequivocally that they have got wrong. Running back is one of them. Like, they just flat out got that wrong. That's not, you know, Duke Johnson and Philip Lindsay were the first two running backs on the depth chart on Sunday. They were the first two guys in the game. That means you got it wrong at the beginning of the season. There's not really an excuse for that. Imaj, you had every opportunity. You chose to go that way, which is fine. As long as you can admit that we were wrong, let's not do this again.
Something to keep an eye out for over the next few weeks is Chris Greer will deliver his end of season presser. And you would have thought that that would be an ideal time to partly self-analyse the team's performance over the season. But realistically, don't expect any gems to come out of that. He'll toe the line. He won't give you anything. He'll say, yeah, two as our guy, and as he is at that time. Yeah. So it's almost as if that's the starting point where they should begin to self-analyse their performance of the season, yet they will do that behind closed doors. They will never release anything like that in public, even though Chris Greer does have his end-of-season presser where he would surely articulate that kind of areas of success, areas of failure, areas that need development, that sort of thing.
What's the worst thing that the Dolphins can do at that quarterback position for you in the offseason, Lee? What do you reckon?
To me, is honestly invest too much. I just think we know we've got, like, it's beautiful having lots of cap space and all the possibilities that it brings right now. But also, like, if you want Russell Wilson, that's going to have to be a trade. So that's not just the monetary investment. There is going to be draft capital. And although we haven't necessarily drafted well on the O-line, we have drafted well at other positions. There have been some very good draft picks, and I don't know how much of that capital I'm willing to give up when I know this team is deeply flawed anyway. It's not that I don't like any of the other quarterbacks. Hey, if Russell Wilson's the starting quarterback of the Miami Dolphins, I'm going to be happy about it. Like, he's a great quarterback. But I just think it's easy to get lost in. If you do that, you might end up with the same wide receiver core. And I don't think we want that, because we need someone who gets open. Because Tyler Lockett gets open. Tyler Lockett, you ever get a chance to watch Tyler Lockett play, like, where you can just isolate him, he just gets open. Like, Russell Wilson's used to playing with that. We don't have one of those. Jalen Waddle gets open underneath. That's kind of it. Yeah. Although I thought he did, I thought he did a great job on the deep ball that he caught yesterday. I thought it was a beautifully thrown ball, but it was the separation he created compared to when they tried to make that similar throw to, like, a Devontae Parker the last couple of times they tried to make that throw to him. So, it'd be overinvestment. I don't want them to cripple themselves trying to fix one position if it's going to cause you to lose, you know, across the board elsewhere.
What's your question, Andy, in relation to the quarterback specifically or any position?
The quarterback, yeah.
I think the worst thing they can do from a quarterback position is to let this Deshaun Watson thing fester again, because it caused so much bad PR the way it was handled last time. To let it happen the same thing happen all over again would do no good for the organisation whatsoever. So I think if they are going to go after Watson, do it, just get it done out the way. Don't let it fester, because it can't do anyone any good. And they surely should have seen that last time. Yeah. The amount of bad publicity it had and the effect it had on the team in terms of supporting the incumbent at that position. I think they've got to, again, it's all going down to self-analyse, and I can't believe they agree with themselves in terms of how they handled it, because it wasn't handled very well, especially when it got made public. So the worst thing they could do is just let history repeat itself and the same thing happen again.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to go down the same route. I just feel that my worst one would be just making that move before any kind of legal situation is clarified, which is absolutely the key thing. I just think, to be honest, in general, the Watson thing annoys me, because I just think the PR of getting Deshaun Watson is crap. And you'll see from my Twitter exchanges the last couple of days on the main pod account, I just feel like he's not the guy. I'd rather have two of them, Deshaun Watson, next year, because of like the example it sets to like the young people. Like, you know, you've got like kids watching it who are kind of going to go, oh, it's okay to do what Watson's done or whatever, and still get a multi-million pound career. That's the long and short of it there, isn't it, to be honest? But you know, to make that move even before anything that's been clarified is just pretty shambolic.
I agree. Don't disagree with what you're saying there. But if Deshaun Watson comes in and goes and wins 10, 11, 12 games, it'll be forgotten, won't it? Unfortunately.
It will be. That's just the way the NFL, or any kind of professional sports, is, sadly, isn't it? It's just, you know, and it's not to say I won't support the team. If Watson comes in, it's just been very difficult to kind of agree with their sort of like, you know, their community work and stuff like that. It's going to be sort of just put in jeopardy by getting a man who's been accused of the such things that he has been. It's just that's just a difficult situation, which is why I'm very much an advocate for exploring the veteran market. If you can get a Wilson, I don't think you are realistically going to get a Rodgers. I think this is the year that Rodgers wins it all. And if he does, I think he might even retire. But yeah, you know, you've got to really do that work on who's available.
I know Lee wants to jump in, but just before you do, Lee, you touched on the work in the community that they do. If there is any organisation that can turn it around in terms of the work they do in the community and people's perceptions, it would be the Dolphins, because they're a top-notch organisation for the work that they do in the community. So if anyone can turn it around,
100%, 100%.
Then you've got to have faith in that organisation that they can do that.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, not doubting that whatsoever. I think it just, you know, you just put the PR as sort of, it'll be like, great work, but here's this guy, which is a shame, isn't it? But, sorry, Lee, go on.
No, I was just going to say, if they need any reminder of how badly the original situation was handled, they're going to get a taste of it come probably next Sunday afternoon at the end of the game, because that's when the first stories will go out about Deshaun Watson. And because nothing can happen for a period of time anyway, they're going to get that taste all over again because of the way it was handled the first time. So it'll be nice and fresh in their minds to hopefully to not repeat that. But let's be honest, we're going to be linked with every quarterback going. Every time there's a rumor of a quarterback, the Dolphins are going to be at the top of the list, because we've still got okay amount of picks, even though they're not necessarily our own, and we've got a lot of cap space. So we're all the same as when we were going to draft Tua. It was everyone was in play for the Dolphins because they've got money and picks, and it's going to be the same again. So I would imagine a lot of those stories are already written. They're ready to hit publish on them. Just fill in the score for next week's game.
Yeah. What's fascinating is the amount of teams that do need a quarterback in this offseason, and the sort of very small market of quarterbacks that are going to be available. That's absolutely fascinating. You know, you've got the Broncos, the Panthers, probably the Falcons. You know, there's obviously, you know, you've even got questions about like San Francisco and stuff, even though they've drafted the same sort of situation there. It's all very interesting, isn't it? And if like Wilson does become available, that price is going to absolutely go through the roof, sort of thing. But then you're going to also see a bit like You know, I think, and I've mentioned Jameis already, but the market for someone like Jameis is going to be hot this offseason because teams are going to look at Kenny Pickett, Desmond Ridder, etc., and go, can I win with those guys now? I can probably win with Jameis, and that's probably why the Saints will have to pay a bit more to bring him back this time. Yeah, so it's like a very, very small market. So if the team does decide to move on from Tua, they've got to do it quickly, because if not, they're just going to be behind the eight ball. And it's not gonna, you know, it's not gonna pan out well, and we're gonna end up going into next season with, God forbid, it saw someone suggest yesterday, but Ryan Fitzpatrick coming back off his injury is going to be the starting quarterback for the Dolphins next year, which none of us really want. I'm assuming at this point,
there is absolutely no reason for them not to have their plan in place well in advance. You've been knocked out of the playoffs. You know, the playoffs are going to go on. There's an extra game this year. Like, you know, there's. Yeah, there's absolutely no excuse to not get what you want. Like if they want one of those veterans, there is no excuse for them not to get it. They've got picks that they can use. They've got all the cap space that they could possibly need. There is absolutely no excuse for the day one starter not to be the guy you want it to be.
Yeah, and you've got desirable location. Team owner is willing to put his hand in his pocket, stuff like that. But yeah, and we all know that now what's going to happen is that Tua's going to pass for 450 yards against the Patriots. and we're all going to be we had this discussion last week. But anyway, that's the way it goes. Any other points you want to go on, Si? You're coming in.
Yeah, just one thing about, you mentioned about the Patriots game on Sunday. One thing I do want to see come out of that game is Jalen Waddle beat the rookie reception record. That's something that would be a significant achievement, and I'd be pleased for him for getting so close. He's only three now behind it. I think it would be to not get that record now would just be a travesty. I think he's certainly come on this season. He's definitely no regrets over that particular selection at all. So let's hope we keep our fingers crossed and he gets that record.
Yeah, I think he deserves it. But saying that, he had every opportunity to catch those balls yesterday. You know, that he had a few drops as well. Uncharacteristic, but, you know, would have been nice to have wrapped it. I know. Don't say why, but it's completely my fault.
Jinxed,
I told you, didn't I? I told you before the game. It was going to be a jinx.
You did. Oh, good. Right. Any other points before we shift on out?
Yeah, just a slight one. I know officiating is bad across the NFL, but the officiating in that game yesterday was exceptionally poor. I had no problem with Devontae Parker getting a penalty because the call was horrendous. Not that I think it actually makes... I don't think the Dolphins win the game because I don't think they're playing well enough anyway, but it's not the point. Mike Gesicki just doesn't get any calls either. Like, again, he seems to be held on every single play. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It seems to be worse than most teams.
Yeah, it was bad. And talking to Mike Gesicki calls, he gets called by the announcers every player that isn't Mike Gesicki and gets at least one. I just could see like a big 81 and coming out of the backfield on that one player, and it was like, Gesicki's in the backfield. It's like, it's not. Like, we can all see it. Come on, you've got the seat in front of you.
Darren Smythe even made a catch and they said it was Gesicki, didn't they?
And we know that in the press box, they actually give you the sheet. And it's a really beautiful thing. If I can, I'll try and post it on Twitter, because they give it to you in number order and alphabetically. You cannot get it wrong. It's nice and easy to find a player's name for both teams. There's no excuse.
What I like about those sheets as well is they actually tell you how to pronounce the most difficult surnames as well. So just so you don't get it wrong.
But apparently it doesn't help.
No, it does not. Mike Gesicki has been Matt Collins and Durham Smythe too many times. We'll get out of here then. Just a quick one to say, obviously, if you listen to this, you found the podcast. But if you're looking for it somewhere else and you've resorted to whatever you are listening to it on, I've put a link on the Twitter bio where you can kind of see all the different pages that you can get the podcast via. So if you want to do it somewhere else, go get it via there. And thanks for listening again. You know, disappointing week, disappointing end to the season in terms of playoff hopes. But let's hope we go and hammer the Patriots next week. See you later.